I might raise some new ideas that could lead to some new directions and activities in the future. Disclosure, no conflict of interest. Let me say that I'm sorry that I don't have any business relations to declare. Well, we all know the internet, which is not anymore any new tool as it was 10 or 15 years ago. People all over the world use it for any kind of purposes and has become very popular as communication device. The costs have been gone down. Technology has become very friendly. People all over the world use it more and more. And it becomes the major communication and information retrieval tool. We know and we all talk about the digital gap, and it's well documented. However, the digital gap is also decreasing. Number of people who are using the internet of different social classes and education level is kind of shrinking. And all groups in all countries gradually more and more are using the internet. It is being used, as you know, for any kind of wish, learning in school, buying merchandise, playing, having sex, dating, publishing, art, poetry, stories, personal experiences, and, of course, getting help, advice, and support. I know you've seen these figures just a day or two ago. This is quite updated for March 31st this year. And these are the world statistics of usage of the internet in different continents. As you can see, right here in the last column, still in Africa and in the Middle East, the figures are quite low. But if we look at the growth of using the internet, you can see very clearly that both in Africa and the Middle East, the percentage of growth in the last 8 years are enormous. In other words, the gap is continuing to shrink, and I believe that in several years, because of different reasons such as lowering the cost and support by different agencies, more and more people will use the internet on a regular basis. Right now, however, this is the global picture of how many people use the internet or the percentage of using the internet. North America, of course, is leading, and the least people are using it in Africa, but this is changing very rapidly. I would like to talk now for a few minutes about the psychologically related unique characteristics of online communication. We all take it for granted, but I think we have to talk and to make us aware a little bit more about the specific and unique characteristics of online communication. First of all, a person who uses the internet, as opposed to telephone or just talking face to face, has a feeling or a sense of privacy and control much more than any other tool that we've been using. Textuality is very important. I know that people are talking here about video chat, in other words, communicating with one another with a webcam, but we know that most people, and that's the statistics, prefer to use text messages, text communication, either email or chat or using their blogs or websites, and they prefer it over being seen visible by other people, and there are many reasons for that. I'll talk about it in a minute. The late Al Cooper talked about the triple A engine of why people use and like to use the internet. He talked about anonymity, availability, and affordability, which are still the main factors. But if we talk about anonymity, we have to think and we have to understand that anonymity is not only lack of identification of a person. Anonymity is also lack of visibility or invisibility. It is also lack of eye contact with another person. And when people are in touch, are in contact, by text, not being visible, and not being in an eye contact with another person, they go through what we call the online disinhibition effect, which make them reveal, expose, disclose much more about themselves. In terms of being therapists or people who work in support, this is a great thing. I know from my experience and lots of research that many clients who come to online counseling, they open up and they tell their personal stories in a few minutes to a counselor or to a person they've never met before and probably will never meet. And as opposed to sometimes they go to therapy for several months before they tell similar stories to their psychiatrist or psychologist. Acceptability is very important. Now the internet has become a norm of communication. Everybody uses the internet. You cannot be different from others. You would like to be as everybody else. That's another factor or motivation of using the internet. And of course, the flexibility of usage alternatives. You can use, you can go to sites, you can use the chat, you can use the video cam if you want, you can talk over with other people through Skype, and all different kinds of channels are available, as opposed to face-to-face communication, where you are bound to one channel of communication, just talking to other people face-to-face. Mobility is a new thing, roaming, where we can use the internet now by our cellular phones, and I think this is something that will develop in coming years, so we can use the internet by hi-fi and other technologies everywhere and anywhere, not being connected to a specific network, a local network, or to our desk. Let's talk a little bit specifically about online help and support. Well, since the onset of the internet, has extensively been used to seek help and to get help and support in various areas of distress. Ways of being helped vary tremendously. Online counseling, for instance, started, or at least I know it started, or evidence of start was in 1995, 96, where the first emails between therapists and clients, people were seeking help, contacting psychologists or counselors over the net with their questions. There have been the first support groups, not on the forms that we know of them today, the way they are today, but the older form of news groups were used, many of them were used as support groups. The different ways of getting support was very flexible. First of all, we had instructive and guiding information. More and more sites were launched, and information was posted about what to do in this or other situation where a person is in distress and need help. Online assessment. Testing on the internet started in 1996. The first tests appear on the internet. They keep, like, the technology and the design is improving all the time. Professional advice. Counseling and therapy through multiple procedures and online support groups. I would like to say a word about online support groups. Online support groups are not an alternative or replacement for therapy. Many people make this mistake and think that if a person joins a cancer patients or any other disease support group, this might be a replacement for treatment or some kind of actual professional therapy. This is not true. Support groups can provide help, support, mental support, emotional support, and contribute directly to a person's well-being and sense of empowerment, which is very, very important in terms of coping with the disease or the distress. But this is not a replacement for therapy. And of course, now we know that expressive writing is very important. We heard one presentation here about it. Expressive writing, and we know it much more, many more years before the internet. Expressive writing is very important. It's another way to ventilate your feelings, to share with others, and it provides much relief. Now we can do it online through blogs and other ways. People actually exploit the internet to get help and find relief. However, we don't know how many. We don't know how many therapists provide help online. We don't know how many people find help online. We have no statistics either in a specific country nor globally. We don't really know. We have only estimates. So we believe that there are over 150,000 online support groups currently operate around the world. This is only an estimate. I heard from other people that are over 400,000. I don't know. My estimate, and just by reviewing the literature and speaking to experts in the area, I think this is the correct number, but nobody really knows. And we know that thousands of mental health professionals involved in provision of online services. We know that they provide online counseling and therapy. We know they are involved in designing web-based therapies. We don't know really how many of these projects operate, how many people, how many therapists and professionals are involved with those. Hundreds of thousands of websites offer rich information on numerous types of psychological difficulties. We have no idea how many, but we do know that many of them are not really reliable and you cannot really use their information and get real help. There is ever-growing number of what I call hotlines, that's a combination of online and hotline, services for people in distress. I've initiated one in Israel, which have been operating for the last 9 years, for people in severe mental distress and suicidal, and we have helped and saved lives of many, many people. Now it's becoming more and more conventional, I would say, in Israel as well as in other countries. Let me talk a little bit about mass disasters. We know that mass disasters have happened and will inevitably will happen. Some of them are natural, such as hurricane or earthquakes. Some other are man-created, such as terror attacks. They're usually sudden, unexpected, or the expectation is for a very long, very short range, and traumatic for many people. The trauma might be physical or medical, but we are talking here about the psychological part of it, how people are affected in terms of their emotions and behaviors. I would like to go over several examples of recent mass disasters. I'll talk about them, and I guess some of them have been mentioned here. I'll just mention the disaster and what we know about the psychological effect, and then I'll bring some data that, as far as I know, hasn't been shown here in this conference, about the internet involvement with these cases, with these incidents. The first one, I think that nobody mentioned here, but this was really a mass disaster, although only two people were killed. Princess Diana and her fiancé, what should I say? Princess Diana died of a car accident in August 31, 1997. Car accident in Paris. It was a shock for many, many people. How many people remember the day or the moment they heard about this death? Wow, most of you. Okay. I can remember exactly where I was when I heard it and the way I was shocked and how it affected me, you know. Not only emotionally, but physically, you know. And I'm not British, and I didn't know her personally, but, you know, she was a figure. She was a beloved person by many. Her sudden death caused enormous grief and mourning of hundreds of millions of people around the world, especially British people, but not necessarily British people. This was a kind of a mass disaster. It was very traumatic for many, many people. Actually, there is research that documented many psychological symptoms of self-injury, sleep disturbances, depression, suicide, and bedwetting, and other symptoms. And actually, research about PTSD is still going on. The last study that I read, the last paper I read about the PTSD was published only a few months ago. And people, after so many years, 12 years, are still having symptoms that are related to this incident. We also know that conspiracy theories emerge all over the internet, not only the internet, also the newspapers and gossip and whatnot, but it was all over the internet and they contributed to the anxiety of many people. The internet was just in its beginning in these days of 1997, you know, it was the way we know it before, today at least. However, there were three or four aspects that the internet was related to the death of Princess Diana. First of all, it was dealt with, discussed, and people shared information and their grief and emotional reactions over news groups all over the internet, not only in England but all over the world. Second, the news group were saved to support, not only to share information or to deliver gossip and information, true or false information, but also to support one another. And also there were dedicated websites, some of them you can still can see, websites, most of them are in England or by English people, or British people, I should say, were launched in order for memorial purposes. And memorial purposes on the internet, memorial sites, really serve emotional needs. The second example I would like to talk about was the one that we talked a lot here, the World Trade Center terror attacks, or 9/11. So all of us remember 9/11, of course. Do you remember the moment you heard about 9/11? Who does? Everybody. Okay. It was a shock for everybody, all over the world. I was on a small boat in a French canal, going with my wife, and somebody called our cellular phone and told us we didn't believe, but we saw French people laughing and talking and looking at stores, and it was kind of shock all over. Anyway, it was the biggest terror attack in America ever, of course. In addition to the huge physical destruction, the attack caused the direct death of how many? 3,000 people, and emotional injury of many others. Research, as we heard today, and we have heard all through the conference, research documented typical traumatic symptoms, including depression, anxiety, fears, bedwetting, and occurrence of aggression and violence. It was especially in the United States, but not only, also in other countries as well. PTSD symptoms have lasted for a long period and are still being followed up. Now, a few things about the internet and 9/11. This is taken from a study published in 2004. Let's look at the left two figures. This is has to do with writing in blogs right before and after the incident. You can see here, just before, you see the date down here, just before, this is like the zero point of writing in blogs. So emotion positivity, how positive people were in their writing, went down right after the incident and gradually went back up. Okay? Social processes, how people related to one another, how they were looking for interaction with others, was here just before and went up tremendously right after the incident and then went gradually down. Okay? We have also the Pew Internet and American Life Project, actually two reports based on surveys they made right after the incident of 9/11. Number of pages downloaded, now site visits, 1 billion before, 3.4 billion on the day of 12th of September. You can see the difference here. Number of page downloads, see the difference here. Number of online of minutes spent online, see the difference here. In other words, people were looking at the internet. This was the normal reaction of going into the internet and look for information on trying to communicate with other people through the internet. Let's look at the right side. People were looking for information and they went to different sites and look at the difference against normal days where they were using these sites. Okay? Sites that are formal and authoritative in order to get formal and true and correct information about the incidents. Okay? They were looking for differences between men and women and they found out that more women were using the internet for these purposes than men. Another study has to do with the difference or additions of using email on top of using the telephone in order to communicate with friends or with family members. As you can see, people who called family members, okay, 37 or 38% called family members, but on top of them, okay, 20 other percent use the internet, okay? So many people, like people who 61%, sorry, this group, they didn't call, they didn't use the telephone, but they used the internet to communicate with friends and with family. People who called friends, many of them use the email as well in order to communicate with people. So the email was an additional tool on top of using the telephone in order to provide information, to talk about it, to share with friends and family about the incidents, about their feelings. The third incident, or the mass disaster I wanted to talk about, is that tsunami that we all remember. Yeah, who remembers where he or she was on the date of the tsunami? Christmas Day 2004. Most of you, all of you, okay. So the tsunami took place on Christmas Day 2004, a huge tidal wave, the tsunami, caused by an inner ocean earthquake, swept the coast of several countries all over. You can see here in this nice picture how it started at this point and, you know, went all over the ocean and touched the coast of these countries. So many countries were affected, and because it was a Christmas break for many people, Europeans and Americans and Australians, hundreds of thousands of tourists were in this area that were affected as well. This brought a special world attention to this area, more than if it was, you know, without being on a Christmas day. Millions of people were affected, you know. Houses, families were wiped out. Property. How many people got killed? Anybody knows? 30,000? Any other guess? 230,000? Well, actually, the number, according to the World Health Organization, is 300,000 people got killed, were actually killed. Psychological effects were documented and described: fears and anxiety, depression, obsessive thoughts, nightmares, and many other kinds of behavioral withdrawals. It's amazing that all of these countries, all the countries I mentioned and that were affected, there were, until today, studies about the effects of the incident, of the tsunami. And actually, people that were affected to begin with are followed up with their PTSD, and it's amazing to see, and actually it's not surprising, that they have very similar symptoms of PTSD as we have in the Western world. Internet. Well, the internet was extensively used in various ways. First of all, please, for donations. Very important. There were blogs that used for identify missing people, to call for volunteers, to share emergency information, and there were websites aimed to share personal experiences. People really wrote about their experiences, not only information or the report of information on specific damage, but just talk about the personal experiences as sharing with others their emotional stuff. Hurricane Katrina, I guess that everybody remember that week or 2 weeks. It was devastating. We knew about it a few days in advance, thanks to good technology and and science. So it wasn't really a surprise. However, many people evacuated the area, and however, the damage was huge, and many people died. 2,500 people died as a direct effect of the hurricane. Many people left homes for several weeks. Many had no homes to return to. I was in New Orleans just a few months after the Katrina, and it was really terrible, terrible to see, because I was there before and I was there after. It's unbelievable. Studies have been conducted, and there were clear evidence for depression, anxiety, and various PTSD symptoms. Intergroup violence and aggression, which was specific to this incident, mass disaster, took place in different places, in town and outside of town. The black community, apparently due to their lower economic opportunities, suffered the most, both physically and psychologically. Sites devoted full space and resources to help people, like reporting and information, trying to provide advice and help. Sites provided continuous updates, reliable information, specific pleas for help, and this was very, very important because people were separated from one another, and someone who was in a certain house in the end of the city and nobody knew about him or her, he or she could publish on the internet that I'm at this specific point, come and rescue me. Sites provided space for sharing personal experiences, making donations, expressive writing in blogs and forums, and to locate person, as I mentioned. Again, the Pew Internet American Life Project had a survey in 2005, and they showed that, and that's include Hurricane Katrina and Rita. 13 million Americans made donations online for hurricane relief. 50% of all internet users got news online about the hurricanes, mostly from websites of the mainstream media, but also from many blogs. 5% of internet users created their own relief efforts, and 4% posted their own material online. In other words, the internet was used very heavily, extensively, in this related to this mass disaster. A study that was published showed that 75% who of people who were affected by the incident used support groups, okay? And many of them posted on neighborhood forums. They were looking for some kind of a correlation or relationship between the level of personal damage and the way or the time they spent online, but they didn't find any. People who were going through a severe damage or low damage, they used the internet in a very similar way. Many people describe Katrina experiences via email, as you can see. No differences between the genders, almost two-thirds. Read words of encouragement, many of them, 40%. And posted words of encouragement, 13%. So the internet, according to this data, was quite extensively used. This is from another study that showed blog feeds by location. Now, this showed three different mass disasters. I will not talk about the London bombing, if you remember, of the subway stations, the tube stations and the bus. But I will talk, we can see here the New Orleans and the Pakistan earthquake, which I'll talk about in a moment. As you can see, okay, we are speaking about, this is New Orleans, just before the incident, number of block feeds, and it jumped here around the Hurricane Katrina time. Okay, so people wrote much, much more during and after the incident. This shows the similar, what happened in after the London attack, how they used the blogs in England right before and after the attack. Here you can see different kinds of communication devices, blogs, phone, email. I don't know what the difference between email and email. Anybody knows? This is from the journal. Anyway, and SMS. I thought there was something that I don't know, but anyway, you can see the the upper line here with the little cubes, this refers to blogs. So you can see the blogs was on most dates the most active way of people to communicate or to talk to others than telephones or SMS or emails. Actually, SMS, at least in 2005, was hardly used, you can see down here. The fifth and the last incident I would like to talk on is the Pakistan-Kashmir earthquake. I guess most of you, including myself, are not really familiar with Kashmir. Kashmir is the, if we look at this map, we can see Iran is here, this is Afghanistan, this is Pakistan, this is India, and this is the Kashmir area. Okay, Kashmir is an area of very long time wars between India and Pakistan. They both would like to have, I have no idea why this area of Kashmir, like the ownership of this geographical area. Anyway, in Kashmir itself, there was an earthquake in October 8, 2005. By the way, I've mentioned that all five incidents took place in the second half of the year. Any reason for that? I don't know. Okay. It was a very powerful earthquake, and it shook the region. Many people died. Any estimate? Of course not. We know nothing about Kashmir. And unfortunately, sadly to admit that we don't really care much about Kashmir. Anyway, 80,000 people got killed on the direct effect of the earthquake. Now think that 80,000 people got killed, how it affected the rest of families and society over there. Okay. This mass disaster received relatively little world attention, apparently because of the remote location and the political matters. Due to geographical and physical factors, as well as relatively less developed social system, rescue operations and health support were partial and very, very slow. Many of the people who died just because their help didn't come on time. However, there was research, including on psychological trauma of survivors. And again, they found the typical symptoms of PTSD among survivors. I wanted to show you earlier, that the use of blogs, you can see down here, the Pakistan, and it was a little peak here. This was the date. So they did use blogs related to the incident. Okay, it was a direct effect right around this date, but the usage was very low relatively to London or to New Orleans, because of the less usage of the internet and technological, you know, boundaries they have there. However, there were two studies on psychological help that could have been given to Kashmir survivors, both by a group of psychiatrists that were using distance assessment and treatment, and they were very successful. And the other one showed that the lack of internet service in the area, in other words, people who couldn't use or didn't know how to use the internet, cost lives because of lack of what they call human sensors. So let me summarize now some of the social functions of the internet in mass disasters. Reviewing mass disasters in the last decade highlights several important roles of the internet. These roles mainly refer to psychological relief of individuals and groups and also other types of help. Numerous online applications may take part in providing such relief, and I'll extend about it later. It is now clear that these procedures are not only possible but ought to be utilized at times of mass disaster. First of all, the diffusion of reliable and relevant information. People at time of anxiety and threat are looking for information. People are helpless, people are anxious, and they're looking for information, reliable, formal information they can rely on. Internet can provide that very easily. Sharing information on personal distress, people would like to share with others what happened to them. The internet can provide a very efficient vehicle for sharing through email, chat, blogs, etc. Maintaining personal communication within and outside the community, like authorities can communicate to people, people can ask for help, etc. Locating missing people. Use of remote psychological assessment instruments. We heard about it this morning, or actually yesterday, that we can use the internet very easily for online testing and assessment devices, so people can go there and test themselves and get some feedback about their condition, if they need help, what sort of help. Providing group support, and I mentioned before about online support groups that are very effective in promoting people's sense of empowerment and well-being. Providing trauma-related counseling and therapy, either online counseling and therapy or by web-based intervention that we heard so much about them here. Allowing space for posting and reading of personal diaries and reports. People would like to share and write and share about their experiences, about their miseries, about their pains. Wonderful place to share with others. And providing an online grieving space. What I'm proposing is that accidental and unplanned use of the internet in mass disasters is not enough. I mean, we saw that people used it, authorities used it, but this is not enough. I think we can use prevention. Preventive and preemptive steps could and should be taken to make online procedures in mass disasters standard. In other words, to be prepared for mass disasters, although we never know when they're going to take place. But we can plan and prepare the operations needed, the infrastructure, the people, so they can be get into usage right away. This means that two actions should be promoted. First, the construction and maintenance of an upgraded, tenable, destruction-proof communication network that could service people and communities worldwide via wired, wireless, and mobile devices, operated and connected by various means, both land-based and satellites, and backed up by sophisticated power sources. Actually, this can be done. People from technology say this is doable very easily nowadays and in the coming future. And the second point is, we should initiate and prepare information to people and educate people on how the internet can be used under circumstances of mass disaster. With current emerging technologies, these actions are entirely possible. Development of the next generation networking to be deployed in a few years perfectly fits this course. Social preparedness and development, including education and training, might be the biggest challenge. International emergency network is a highly challenging enterprise. Costs will be enormous. Severe cultural and language barriers cause obstacles and obstructions among nations and relevant organizations. Technological difficulties will be great. Implementation long and tiring. However, international bodies led by RUF organization or some kind of a task force, international task force, should collaborate and advance the challenge. I would like to talk about something that unfortunately I don't have a slide for. I prepared just a few days before I arrived here and after I sent the presentation in, that what I envision is that we have a free kind of a portal which is local by country or by community, but it's equivalent and similar for all countries. People can enter it or enter a portal of another country if they wish by their language. In other words, if an Israeli guy lives in the States, he can enter the Israeli portal. The portal is inactive. It's in a sleeping position. It comes into action only at time of need. This portal has six different parts. One part is information. Information which is formal, reliable, continuous, full, and posted or advertised or dispensed by the authorities. When I say continuous, I mean all kind of information, all item is being posted all the time. People can look at the site and moment by moment be aware of any item and any relevant information related to the mass disaster to prevent gossip, to prevent conspiracy theories. There will be a space for questions and answers, so people can post questions and get answers related to information about the disaster. There will be links to resources, information resources relevant, which are good and reliable. And of course, we can post there a call for volunteers or donations if you want. This is the first part. Second part is assessment. In this part, we can post, we can prepare questionnaires and tests, online of course, that we prepare them in advance. They are reliable and valid. They are guided and supervised and updated. And they are relevant to all kind of effects and symptoms we have seen in these cases that I've described. Of course, after taking an assessment device, a person will get some kind of recommendation in what condition he or she is and what should be done about it. Either be referred or something else. The third section will be of online counseling. There will be either chat or email communication available for people who are interested in it. There will be counselors which are trained and supervised who will offer this kind of counseling for people who wish to get counseling online. The fourth section will be of web-based interventions. We heard so much about so many web-based information. We know that most of them are so effective. There will be a list of specific targets or specific problems of different interventions online, and people by self-help could use this or another program. Of course, it will be basically CBT, as it has been shown to be the most effective way to cope with traumatic symptoms. The fifth section will be of blogs. Any person who wishes can open a blog right away and post there whatever he wants. Of course, it will be censored in some way, so people who will post negative or negative information or false information, this will be crossed out. But in principle, people will be able to open their own blogs either for expressive writing, to share their personal reports about their conditions, to call for help, and to identify missing people. And the fifth section will be of support groups, online support groups, where there'll be links to these or other support groups related to depression or anxiety or loneliness or death or other topics related to the event. Of course, the groups will be moderated by official and trained moderators. I can see that this kind of a portal, which comes into action right after a mass disaster, okay, anywhere in the world, made up in advance, according to the local language and traditions and norms, can be of much help and prevent lots of devastation. Of course, we can use such a website or portal for research and to follow up people in order to improve it for the later usage. Cost. As I said, things like that cost a lot of money. You know, there are many international organizations that might be available to support such an initiative. The UN, with UNICEF and UNESCO, NATO, the World Bank, European Commission, or the Arab League, Interpol, International Red Cross, WHO, and other organizations. If we spend so much money on launching spaceships, you know, and each time it costs us about $500 million, it should cover much more than what we need. If the Pope visit, and I have nothing against the Pope, of course, the Pope visit to Israel last week cost $250 million, you know. So if we really would like to prevent and to help people in cases of mass disaster, we can do it and we can raise the money. Thank you very much. These are my beloved three grandchildren.
Tout d'abord, permettez-moi d'apporter une information complémentaire. Souvent, on pense que les sinistres sont soudains et que leurs impacts sont rapides. Il ne faut jamais oublier qu'il y a aussi un type de sinistre qu'on appelle les sinistres insidieux et qui sont là depuis plusieurs années et auxquels on est de plus en plus confrontés. On a les exemples des différentes pandémies qu'il y a eu, d'épidémie. Ce sont des sinistres qui commencent, surtout dans le secteur biologique, qui commencent de façon insidieuse. D'autres exemples plus près de nous, au Québec, la tempête de verglas, ça a commencé. Les premiers jours, c'était de la pluie verglaçante qui tombait. Ça a tombé pendant une journée, deux jours, trois jours. Ensuite, on a commencé à avoir des interruptions de courant électrique, les effets dominos sur l'industrie, sur les services de base, etc. Et le Saguenay, c'était la même chose. Ça a commencé par de la pluie. Les sols ont été saturés au bout de 4-5 jours. Ensuite, les rivières ont monté et les barrages ont cédé. Une vue que les sinistres arrivent soudainement avec un impact rapide, il y en a beaucoup. C'est ça, souvent ceux qui sont le plus médiatisés et qui apportent beaucoup d'intérêt. Mais il faut pas oublier que les aspects insidieux des sinistres amènent beaucoup plus d'anxiété que les autres types de sinistres qui amènent une peur soudaine, tandis que les sinistres insidieux créent beaucoup d'anxiété. L'autre chose, je trouve que les recommandations qui sont faites sont intéressantes, mais il ne faut pas oublier qu'il y a des organisations de sécurité civile à travers le monde qui sont là depuis plusieurs années, qui sont très bien structurées, qui adressent tous les aspects de la réponse aux différents sinistres qui arrivent. Et beaucoup d'organisations de sécurité civile sont rendues au rendez-vous avec Internet, avec les technologies d'information. Si on regarde au Québec, et c'était le propos de ma présentation qui a eu lieu juste avant, on est déjà rendu là, on a déjà beaucoup de questionnements, on est en train de mettre en place des moyens, on n'a pas tous les moyens encore qui sont développés, mais c'est en voie d'eux, mais on utilise déjà la communication de masse via Internet, la réponse aux citoyens, elle est téléphonique, elle viendra probablement par d'autres types de moyens. Mais il y a déjà des choses qui sont faites, il y a déjà des éléments qui sont développés, et on n'est certainement pas la seule organisation de sécurité civile qui est dans cette voie-là. Donc, il faut faire attention aussi par rapport aux organismes qui sont très, très larges. La concertation, la coordination, à ce moment-là, devient pratiquement impossible, parce qu'au-delà des intérêts humains, des intérêts de sécurité civile, il y a des intérêts politiques. Et il y a des intérêts souvent des conflictuels qui, lorsqu'arrivent des sinistres, ressortent malheureusement et qui font que chaque pays ou chaque gouvernement demeure quand même responsable de la réponse à ses citoyens et il ne peut pas attendre que d'autres organismes collaborent nécessairement avec eux dans certaines circonstances pour apporter les réponses. Merci.
I'm sorry, most of the people here didn't understand your comments. I understand what you're saying is that you already have something similar. Would you like? Okay. What he said was that in Quebec they already have like a local system that right now is moving from using telephone and other devices to internet, and they don't really believe in, he doesn't really believe that cooperation with other agencies or countries might help or improve. Actually, it might damage or undermine operation, right?
Pas vraiment, la collaboration. Pas vraiment, la collaboration existe déjà en sécurité civile sur différents plans. C'est très bien défini dans les protocoles d'entente, entre autres au Canada. Toutes les provinces et territoires ont déjà des protocoles d'entente et d'entraide mutuelle. Le Québec fait partie d'un groupe d'entente avec les provinces atlantiques et les États de la Nouvelle-Angleterre. C'était pas mon propos. Mon propos, c'était qu'il y a déjà des éléments de réponse par rapport aux préoccupations soulevées qui sont déjà là. Il ne faudrait pas tenter de créer des structures parallèles par rapport à ce qui existe déjà, mais composées avec celles qui sont là. Je pense que les éléments que vous amenez sont très intéressants et devraient nous stimuler à poursuivre dans la voie qui est déjà amorcée. Mais il ne faut pas tenter de recréer par ailleurs des choses qui sont déjà en marche, en développement. Mais on n'a pas tout ça, là. On n'a pas tout le setup dont vous nous proposez, que je trouve très intéressant de façon globale, mais plutôt que de le voir d'une façon parachute d'une organisation internationale, de plutôt le voir d'une façon plus collégiale et composée avec les forces vives qui sont déjà dans certains milieux, territoires et avec des structures de coordination qui sont déjà là.
Okay. I totally agree with what you said. you already do what you think it's good for the province, and you cooperate with other agencies and other localities and countries and get the procedures and the interventions and the knowledge that you need. And, you know, I can only bless you for that. In many other places, probably not in Quebec, nothing has been done, and there are no agencies or operations or bodies that refer to mass disaster whatsoever. So probably I wasn't talking about Quebec, but the rest of the world. And I really believe that things that have been developed in Australia or Sweden or Holland that are local can be adapted, translated and adapted to different communities in order to help people. And if you have something like that in Quebec and you don't need it, that's fine. But I'm talking about other communities and other countries that don't have it, such as my country. Okay?
Asia, I can only support and applaud to your idea about the portal that could be used in different countries where appropriate.
Yeah.
And it would be cost efficient. And to support that, let me just remind ourselves that there is a thrust in developing the common guidelines for disaster response from the psychosocial perspective. The one as led by the TENS project, and the NATO has developed recently the similar guidelines, and these two and some other are currently being integrated.
Yeah.
But I must say that the online aspect of disaster response has been neglected there. So I think this conference and also the ideas that you presented here would fit very well with the things that are developing definitely now.
Thank you, Dean. I think that It's not a necessity. It's not the need or the necessity or the idea. I think that the success of such an idea relies on a person or a group that will, you know, promote this idea. And this is something that should be done. It could be done. You know, there'll be, as I said, a task force, international task force, that will take this challenge and work with it and recruit the money and push this operation. I believe it will work. Yeah. Yes, Ellen.
First of all, thank you for your interesting talk. In the Netherlands, we are currently exploring the potentials of such a portal. You are mentioning it will be launched within 3 months.
Oh.
And we have combined, say, the mass disaster orientation with an individual disaster orientation. So also for people or a small community that can experience disaster types of events, and we combine the individual with the mass orientation in order to keep the portal alive and really good funded. But one of the challenges, and I'm curious about your experience or your ideas, is not so much the portal and to develop, say, the right web-based interventions and the algorithms, but to let the organizations at the back office collaborate both online and offline. So I wonder what your experience are in that area.
You're talking about bureaucracy, actually. You're talking about bureaucracy. Yeah, I guess. Yeah, it's education and bureaucracy and all this stuff. I agree, you know. I think that it shouldn't be easy. I'm happy to know that you're doing something in the Netherlands similar to this. My envision is something which is global, you know. I believe that the knowledge that you have in the Netherlands and the tools that you're using there can be adapted to other countries, so we can share and exchange information and knowledge and tools for the same purpose, you know. So I'm really happy, and I hope you share with others, you know. I don't think that governments and authorities can be changed easily, you know. They go by traditions and politics and all this stuff. It will take a lot of convincing and cost-effective kind of proofs, you know, in order to convince that this is worthwhile. I can tell you one thing from my experience. I, as you know, 9 or 10 years ago, I have initiated a service in Israel for people in severe emotional distress and suicidal, SAHAR, which means acronyms for listening and help on the net, which is exclusively provide support for people on the internet, no other kind of contact. I had to fight with the police, I had to fight with the Ministry of Health, I had to fight with government agencies, legal authorities and whatnot in order to do something like that, because everybody said, well, what if a person wants to commit a suicide? What will you do? You don't know who the person is, where he is, what should you do, you know? And we heard about it, you know, in today and yesterday from several people about such a, you know, approach. This is not my approach. I think that if a person comes to a clinic and wants to commit a suicide, he can do nothing about it. He can run away and jump on the, you know, the balcony. I think we can prevent people from doing such things from a distance, not less effective than doing it face to face. Okay. It took several years to convince authorities in Israel, but now we are being supported, financially supported, and we get more money than what we need. From the Ministry of Health, from the Prime Minister, from the military, from different agencies, we get a lot of money on top of private donations, you know, because we were able to show that we are doing a good job and all the feedback that we get and how many lives we have saved by our operation, okay? So I believe that the best way to convince people is to show the facts, you know. So with time, I believe people will be convinced. That's the best answer I can give. Let me, as the final presenter, I think I'm talking on behalf of everybody here. Thank you very much for a very interesting conference and very well organized. And I felt like being treated in a, you know, perfect way. And I think that I'm talking for everybody that you did a wonderful job. Thank you very much.
Thank you, everybody. I think it's pretty clear that internet not only saves, well, internet saves lives, internet saves money, internet allows us to do new things that we could not do before. As researchers, as clinicians, as policy planners, I think it's pretty clear that the future of e-mental health looks promising and that the internet will play a major role in mitigating the impact of traumatic events and can play a significant role in mental health. The director of the psychosocial division is here today. And I was just chatting with her yesterday, and she was telling me she's part of the what committee is it? Strategic Research Planning Committee of the Psychiatry Department of McGill. She was telling me 2 days ago, I would have never thought that the internet played such an important role in mental health, and now that I've attended the conference, I think we should definitely propose to that strategic committee that we hire people that have the knowledge and skills to include, you know, to this needs to become part of our daily lives as researchers, as teachers. This is becoming gradually part of our daily lives. But now we need to convince other people also around us. Thank you very much for having been here. It's been a great crowd. It's been a great conference. I think we had lots of fun and we worked hard as well. So that's the best. Thank you very much. One last thing. There's a wine and cheese in the lobby. The bus will leave at 1:45. I also want to thank a few people. Thanks to the Ministère de la Santé et des Services Sociaux. Merci au Ministère de la Santé et des Services Sociaux pour la traduction. They're the one who funded the translation. Thank you very much. Thank you also for the Douglas, for McGill University, the CIHR, the SSHRC, NATO. And thanks to all of you. Merci donc au Douglas, à McGill, aux IRSC, au CRSH et à l'OTAN. Et merci à vous tous, les intervenants, pour avoir fait de ce colloque un succès. Oh, et une dernière chose, rendez les casques, s'il vous plaît. One last thing, please don't forget to bring back the helmets.